From the early days of Mesopotamia in 2500 BCE to modern Hinduism, religion has been a way for people to make sense of the world and share those experiences with those around them.
It comes about from individuals who are looking for meaning, looking for something more, feeling as if there is something more, having a variety of spiritual experiences in their everyday life, and they're trying to make sense of those experiences.
Sometimes religion has been a form of control, forcing enslaved Africans to convert to Christianity. In others, it has turned into a liberating force.
That's why the Exodus narrative becomes such an important narrative for enslaved Black people, because it is a God who sees an oppressed and enslaved Jewish people, liberates them from that oppression.
Now, in the 21st century, religion is evolving into something new that doesn't look like exactly how it did in the past. Hi, I'm Haya Pinjwani.
And I'm Jalen Green. Welcome back to The City Was Black, a six-part audio series exploring what it means to live in New York.
And how the city has evolved through the point of view of what it means to be Black in New York City right now.
We're at a critical point in New York history. And as you'll learn throughout this podcast, the city would not be the rich melting pot of cultures it is right now without the contributions of Black people.
There isn't a single issue in the city right now that doesn't impact Black people, whether that's immigration, housing, or education. The future of New York City will depend on how Black communities and other minorities survive in the city. Last time we followed Carmen to talk about how rising home prices are pushing Black and brown communities farther from the city.
This episode, we're going to the church that helped Carmen get a home and sit with some of the actors making the church in New York a liberating force for Black New Yorkers, and go to mosques to understand how Islam acts in parallel, sharing Black communities, neighborhoods, and offering an alternative story about who Black people are religiously and politically.
When enslaved Africans arrived with the Dutch in the 1620s, many were pressured to convert to Protestant Christianity of the Reformed Dutch Church.
Some Africans accepted conversion, believing that by joining Dutch religious life, they could sanctify their marriages, baptize their children, and one day seem equal enough to share freedom. Some advocates like Everardus Bogardus, a Dutch Reformed minister, advocated for their spiritual education, an idea welcomed by church elders who saw converted Africans as potentially more trustworthy than their Native American neighbors in the area. By the mid-18th century, a group of equal rights activists called the New York Manumission Society worked with churches to create night schools and African free schools to teach Black children reading and writing. This played a crucial role in the eventual education of newly freed African American children.
Good morning, St. Paul family, St. Paul Christian. Namaste, Salamona. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Amen.
Amen.
For generations, Black churches have been more than places of worship. They've been classrooms, community centers, and safe havens, creating community in times of need and nurturing the next generation.
Taking care of the people's needs is John Bassler. So we don't say this is what the church should do. We say this is what the church is.
Churches also emerged as key organizing hubs, with groups like the Metro Industrial Areas Foundation equipping everyday New Yorkers to unite around local issues rather than relying solely on government action.
Starting with communities, faith communities, judicatories participated, Baptists, you had Roman Catholic, Lutheran, Episcopalians, you had a plethora of religious and denominational expressions. But the point was, is that the people saw their own self-interest in it and realized that we had more in common than we had not in common. So people worked together with a mind to build, and this is how we got here today.
That's Reverend Dr. David K. Brawley, the lead pastor at St. Paul's Community Baptist Church, the church that helped Carmen Daniels secure housing in the previous episode. St. Paul's is one of the many congregations a part of East Brooklyn Congregations that took on a small but urgent issue like fighting for the community's basic needs like street signs and access to unspoiled food. As they won these battles, community leaders realized incremental fixes weren't enough. In the 1970s and early 1980s, they decided to pursue a larger, more transformative goal: build affordable housing. Religion, as civil rights activist Reverend Al Sharpton calls it, has always been a client relationship where people work with their local assembly member, trading help in their communities for their votes.
Historically, Black church was the largest gathering of Black people. in any given Sunday, that was where the majority of blacks were. And if you were interested in politics, you're going to go where the gatherings are. It is safe to assume that anyone that goes to church with their family usually are voters.
The community banded together to support each other because of how hard it is to maintain basic needs in New York.
It is so easy to become homeless in New York City. Food insecurity in New York City is so prevalent. Until churches have to be engaged in the stability of their community.
Reverend Brian Scott has been pastor at Union Baptist Church in Harlem for 9 years. He's noticed churches invest so much energy in supporting people because of the greater challenges and instability many face in New York's urban environment.
If I were living with someone, we share an apartment. If my name is not on the lease when that person is deceased, say they die all of a sudden, then I become homeless because I can't stay in that apartment anymore.
And throughout the 20th century, many people that went to church found it as a saving grace towards a better future in places like New York.
Like Reverend Dr. Rashad Moore, the pastor of First Baptist Church Crown Heights. He grew up in Bedford-Stuyvesant as a product of the Great Migration.
My parents rented this apartment, but the house was built by my church. So I lived in a house that I thought was like the best. And my church was across the street. And the school that I went to was on the next block. And literally, my grandmother lived two blocks down. I only say all of this to say my whole world was in the span of like a 3-block radius.
He told us that for many black people that didn't grow up with money or privilege, the church acted like a ticket out the hood.
There are thousands of high schools in New York. And when I was going to high school, you get 12 choices. So if you're going to go to a music school, you have to audition, dance, right? If you're smart, it's a specialized high school, right? Or you play basketball, there'll be recruiters, right? So everybody needs a ticket to get out the hood.
And that for him came in the form of learning piano from the pastor's wife, teaching him at a young age to play and sight read just enough to help him get into Brooklyn High School of the Arts. But he noticed that times aren't how they used to be. Moore said that when he came back to New York after graduating from Morehouse College in Atlanta, it had become much more difficult to afford to live in New York City. Even for his friends who had gone to college, many of the friends and loved ones he grew up with moved out because it wasn't as easy to start a life.
And the current generation is struggling to find the same meaning in the church. Many were raised with less religious involvement, juggling work, school, and social lives. Now, they seek spirituality and community in more flexible, personal ways digitally, often outside formal congregations, contributing to a growing number of people who identify as religiously unaffiliated.
Pastors have told us that, especially after COVID, church attendance dropped as people stayed home. But as churches move services online, some people reconnected through live streams, virtual Bible studies, and social media. While in-person attendance never fully returned, some pastors say the pandemic opened new doors, service evolving to meet people where they're at, helping people beyond just through religious instruction and teaching religious lessons in ways that resonate with Gen Z and millennials.
Islam is not just a belief system, but a way of life, shaping how they treat others, practice kindness, and move through the world.
It has also been a part of New York City since the early Dutch period, becoming more visible in the 20th century as immigrant communities built the city's first mosques.
Many Black Muslim New Yorkers trace their roots to West and Central Africa, regions that shaped later waves of Muslim immigration into Brooklyn and other boroughs. Harlem in the early 20th century emerged as a cultural center, as Black Muslims from the South and the Caribbean brought distinct religious, political, and cultural traditions.
But for many Black Muslims, discrimination has been at the intersection of their religion and race.
After the September 11th attack on the World Trade Center in New York, the words Muslim and terrorist became intertwined. Many Black Muslims faced discrimination at the intersection of their religion and race.
My mom isn't a hijabi, so we were kind of privileged to not face that. But my dad was visibly, like, you know, brown and Muslim, and he had a job and he had coworkers that treated him different. After that, I really feel like the focus shifted after, like, for a lot of us, after feeling just like safe in our country, we kind of started to feel like a little unsafe and just scared of what's to come.
That pattern was especially visible during New York's recent mayoral race, where Muslim Mayor Zohran Mamdani faced heightened scrutiny, not just for his policies, but for his faith and identity.
While Muslims share the same core beliefs and practices, many Black Muslims still face discrimination within the faith by non-Black Muslims. That's a treatment rooted in a long history of enslavement and colonialism in parts of the Arab world. It continues today through colorism, stereotypes, and the mistreatment of Black African migrants and refugees, many of whom are Muslim. In our next episode, we'll look into how religious spaces are used to help mobilize groups and how politics and modern political organization has impacted Black communities.
This is The City Was Black with your hosts, Haya Panjwani, and me, Jalen Green. This series is produced with guidance from AP Managing Editors Ron Vample and Aaron Morrison. Special thanks to our guests and contributors, Trice Prince from the University of Illinois Chicago, Reverend Dr. David K. Brawley and his team at St. Paul's Community Baptist Church, Reverend Al Sharpton and those at the National Action Network, Reverend Brian Scott, Reverend Dr. Rashad Moore, Sarah Seidman from the Museum of the City of New York, those at Masjid Talhid, Abu Bakari, Musa Ducre, Ramada Ducre, and Yara Shabana.
Thanks for listening.